What is ether?
Ether is the commodity to the future of the internet. Ether is the fuel for every computational step necessary to process a transaction on the future of the internet.
Bankless Nation, very excited to introduce you to our next guest. We have Andrew Keys. We have Dave Marin of the Ether Machine. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks. Before we proceed, I would like to first remind everyone that this podcast may contain forward-looking statements, including, but not limited to, the Ether Machine and Dynamics, expectations or predictions of financial and business performance and conditions, expectations or assumptions as the completion of the proposed transaction between parties, operational development and performance, including, but not limited to, the timing of development milestones, business and operational strategies, competitive and industry outlook, and the timing and completion of the transaction. Forward-looking statements are inherently subject to risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, and they are not guaranteed performance. I encourage you to read the previously disclosed press release issued on July 21st, 2025, and Dynamics' filings with the SEC for a discussion of the risks that can affect the business combination, the Ether Machine's business, and the business of the combined entity after completion of the proposed business combination. Dynamics and Ether Machine are under no obligation and expressly disclaim any obligation to update, alter, or otherwise revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, except as required by law. In addition, these remarks are neither an offer to purchase nor a solicitation of an offer to sell, subscribe, or buy any securities or the solicitation of any vote. In connection with the proposed business combination, Dynamics and Ether Machine intend to file a registration statement on Form S-4 containing a proxy statement and prospectus with the SEC, which you should read carefully and in its entirety when it becomes available, because it will contain important information. Dynamics, Ether Machine, and their respective directors and officers may be deemed participants in the solicitation of proxies of Dynamics' shareholders in connection with the business combination. More detailed information about each company's directors and executive officers and their interests in the business combination will be described in the Form S-4 when it becomes available.
What are you guys starting on? How much Ether do you guys have right now?
So we're anchoring this with 169,984, which is basically the amount of validators divided by 32 of mine. We are going from there.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the press release announced the plan to, at current prices, to be more than 400,000 Ether.
More than 400,000 Ether is square one, so base one, number one for you guys.
Day zero.
And how do you get there? How do you get from the, did you say 169? Yeah. Okay. 169,000. How do you get to 400,000? Is that net new, like, purchasing coming in?
So that's a great question. And I think that this is a key differentiating point. We've seen others say that they own X Ether, but with an asterisk, that's a in the money call option. And we are not going to be employing in the money call options for our exposure.
What is an in the money call option?
So basically, one buys a call for Ether to that it's basically above a certain price at a certain date. And they basically take the cash amount of that delta and they consider that Ether exposure. But because we believe Ether is a productive asset and we are going to be generating our alpha, actively managing that for public market investors, in the money call options leave yield on the table. And if you were to consider this like the Ether ETF is like a stock without having access to a dividend that one enjoys. And so we could employ call options as like proper risk management, but the majority of our strategy, like the well overwhelming, let's call it 99% of our strategy, is around the active ownership and yield generation of Ethereum.
So some of these other treasury companies are doing this via call options, and you're saying it's going to be like straight purchase of pristine Ether in the Ether machine. But so continue that line of thought then. So you've got 170,000 now or so. How do you get to 400,000 of that clean, pristine ETH that you're putting on your balance sheet?
So part of our raise has been in-kind contribution, and part of it has been dollars. And the in-kind contribution is being contributed right now as we speak. The first part of our raise was through a private placement, and capital is due today. Friday, July 25th. And that will immediately be staked and be generating Ether. And then the dollars that come through our private placement will be used to acquire spot actual Ether, not call options, and to be actively risk managed, generating yield through staking, restaking, and eventually through DeFi strategies.
I had a question about how other treasuries are doing this. And recently it was very interesting to me. Tom Lee's outfit, I'm going to forget all the acronyms. David, help me out. BNMR, is that the one?
BNMR, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I knew there was a B because it was formerly Bitcoin. Okay, so Tom Lee's outfit, they added another, I want to say, was it 200,000 ETH, 300,000 ETH? It's all getting lost. About $1 billion worth of ETH just this week, okay? They just, you know, bumped up. Now they're above 500,000. We'll show the strategic ETH reserve where everyone can kind of track this for the latest. How did they buy or get $1 billion worth of ETH in 1 week without the price moving? I mean, what were we, David? Up 9% on the week? That's
yeah, that's right.
That's a price move for ants. I mean, like $1 billion in purchases and we only move 9%. I don't understand where that's coming from.
So I'm not here to talk about other companies. I believe that we're all playing on the same team with Team Ethereum. But a way to have exposure to Ethereum without moving the price would be call options.
But does that count? Does that count on like the ETH Strategic Reserve Treasury website?
It's a derivative.
Will it be ETH in the future?
Well, then if one were to have a call option, they would earn dollars and then would have dollars later to potentially buy Ether, potentially buy more calls. I can't opine for another strategy, but one way to have exposure to Ethereum without necessarily having the price move, but also not being able to participate in the yield generation or really help the network by securing it and validating transactions would be through call options.
In the wild west of DeFi, stability and innovation are everything, which is why you should check out Frax Finance, the protocol revolutionizing stablecoins, DeFi, and Rolex. The core of Frax Finance is Frax USD, which is backed by BlackRock's institutional Biddle Fund. Frax designed Frax USD for best-in-class yields across DeFi, T-bills, and carry trade returns all in one. Just head to Frax.com, then stake it to earn some of the best yields in DeFi. Want even more? Bridge your Frax USD over to the Fraxtl Layer 2 for the same yield plus Fraxtl points, and explore Fraxtl's diverse Layer 2 ecosystem with protocols like Curve, Convex, and more, all rewarding early adopters. Frax isn't just a protocol. It's a digital nation powered by the FXS token and governed by its global community. Acquire FXS through Frax.com or your go-to DEX, stake it, and help shape Frax Nation's future. Ready to join the forefront of DeFi? Visit Frax.com now to start earning with Frax USD and staked Frax USD. And for Bankless listeners, you can use Frax.com/r/Bankless when bridging to Fraxtl for exclusive Fraxtl perks and boosted rewards.
Ethereum's Layer 2 universe is exploding with choices. But if you're looking for the best place to park and move your tokens, make your next stop Unichain. First, liquidity. Unichain hosts the most liquid Uniswap V4 deployment on any Layer 2, giving you deeper pools for flagship pairs like ETH-USDC. More liquidity means better prices, less slippage, and smoother swaps. Exactly what traders crave. The numbers back it up. Unichain leads all Layer 2s in total value locked for Uniswap V4. And it's not just deep. It's fast and fully transparent. Purpose built to be the home base for DeFi and cross-chain liquidity. When it comes to costs, Unichain is a no-brainer. Transaction fees come in about 95% cheaper than Ethereum mainnet, slashing the price of creating or accessing liquidity. Want to stay in the loop on Unichain? Visit unichain.org or follow at Unichain on X for all the updates.
Ever wonder how industry-leading companies like Coinbase, MetaMask, and Phantom Wallet build products that always stay ahead of market shifts and new token listings? It's because they all use the CoinGecko API, the most reliable and comprehensive crypto data API, backed by a rock-solid 99.9% uptime SLA. Builders, analysts, and businesses rely on CoinGecko for real-time data on 9 million cryptocurrencies across 1,500 exchanges and 200 different networks. It goes beyond crypto prices to access liquidity, OHLCV, DEX data, metadata, NFT floor prices, and more, enabling your team to build and scale powerful products like wallets, oracles, exchanges, AI agents, and DeFi applications without limitations. Onboarding is easy with clear documentation and enterprise-grade support that answers you faster than Finality, 24/7 around the clock. Supercharge your product and build with CoinGecko API today. Head to gcko.io/bankless10 and enter code bankless10 for 10% off any plan. CoinGecko API, crypto's most trusted and reliable data source.
I'm going to talk about the machine word because the machine word in the Ether machine seems to be doing a lot of work here. My interpretation of this is that your company is building what you are calling a machine that just produces more Ether, hence the Ether machine. Talk to us about this name, and then tell us how does one build a machine that produces Ether? Let's pop open the hood and tell me what the components look like and how Ether comes out the end of it.
I think this really dovetails nicely with what Andrew was talking about the importance of acquiring pristine ETH. To us, ETH is not just a treasury asset. It's working capital, right? It's kind of the fuel for our reactor, so to speak, is Ethereum itself, right? So like I said, we view the Ether machine as a machine to produce additional Ether, right? And this is kind of why we have assembled this diverse team of deep Ethereum experts to generate the optimal amount of Ethereum on our Ethereum base or Ethereum reserve, so to speak, right? So that's why we have folks like Tim Lowe, who is our CTO, who was the initial founder of Consensus Staking, right? Has been staking since the very inception of proof of stake, right? Folks like Darius Pritzel, who's been deep in DeFi for years, right? Being core contributor to Blue Chip Protocols, et cetera, right? So we kind of have this team of deep Ethereum experts that's going to be focused full-time in-house on generating the optimal amount of ETH that we can generate off this base, obviously in a risk-adjusted fashion.
Yeah, make no mistake, we are Ether heads, and we want to see the Ethereum protocol grow. And to that extent, we want to employ Ethereum as much as possible. Back to kind of this call option example, we want to be staking Ether so we can secure the network and be a benevolent part of the ecosystem. We want to restake Ether so we can use Ethereum's proof of stake security for other middlewares. We want to employ DeFi so we can actually be a contributor to the decentralized financial economy. But at the same time, with this public vehicle, we now have the opportunity to explain to Wall Street and Main Street what Ethereum is. So this is going to be the first time, you know, our banking partner is Citibank. It's the largest investment bank on earth. And say what you will about investment banks, this is going to be the first time you're going to see real sell-side coverage creating reports quarterly. What is Ethereum? What is staking? What is restaking? What are the DeFi protocols? And we're going to use this opportunity to educate Wall Street top down and Main Street bottom up about the power of Ethereum.
As I understand it, Ether is this like unique asset in comparison to Bitcoin as it relates to being productive. You know, Bitcoin, it's got this great narrative, 21 million units, hard cap, easy to understand. I think that's what's propelled MicroStrategy to its highs. But as a reserve asset specifically, employing this same sort of strategy, Ether is pretty unique, specifically due to its productivity. There's a particular like resonance that a productive asset has, a productive store of value reserve asset has for this type of strategy where we are accessing the capital markets, taking on debt to go and buy a store of value reserve asset to put it on the balance sheet. You know, when Bitcoin is not productive, it's inert. Ethereum is highly productive. You can use it inside of Ethereum's DeFi. You can stake it and get a yield. You can restake it and add more yield on your yield. You can I don't know if you guys are doing this, but you can put it into Aave and access stablecoins and get yield. There's all these variety of opportunities that Ether as a productive asset has, which lends itself very well to like having this sort of core business that you need to have in order to pay off the debt that you took on in order to buy more Ether. How am I over the target here, Andrew? Like, is this what you guys are going to do? Are you going to put Ether into DeFi?
So you nailed it. So first and foremost, we need to thank Satoshi for her contribution to the world creating Bitcoin. Bitcoin was the opening act. It is awesome. I was asked on CNBC if I own a Bitcoin, and I said no. I actually own 0.18, which is a little bit of dust. So I do own some Bitcoin. I found that out afterwards.
I recall seeing that clip, and I recall you saying, why would I own a flip phone when I can own a smartphone, is what you
said,
right?
I'd rather have an iPhone than a landline. So Bitcoin's great, and it can serve its singular use case.
Sure.
On the Bitcoin blockchain, there's one asset, Bitcoin. And it does one thing, send. One asset, 1 cent. Ethereum, conversely, is the infinite machine. We can digitize any asset, a bar of gold, a barrel of oil, a stock, bond, derivative, a stable coin, and then we can have infinite functionality. Rather than just send, we can create smart contracts that we can just imagine. And basically, any if-then-else statement can be codified on top of Ethereum. So furthermore, and to that point, where Bitcoin, you need the hardware, real estate, and electricity for proof-of-work mining, Ethereum has a exponentially more efficient consensus mechanism where all you need is the ether and to be a benevolent actor that's self-interested to earn yield via proof of stake. And so ether has this intrinsic yield that we can employ through staking, restaking, and proof of stake. And so I believe it's a better asset for public market exposure. And furthermore to that, so that's like, let's call it the DeFi side of the house. And then you talk about the TradFi side of the house. We believe that MicroStrategy did create from inception a very interesting concept of what we would consider a positive sum game. Bitcoin's a volatile asset, and we can sell the volatility of Bitcoin as MicroStrategy to hedge funds that want to buy volatility and use those proceeds to acquire the asset of Bitcoin as for the shareholders that want exposure to that asset. And that's why I believe there is a multiple to NAV, is the ability to access those public debt markets. That, in my opinion, is a positive sum gain. The good news is that Ether is double the volatility of Bitcoin. So if you liked Bitcoin as a volatile asset, hedge fund XYZ, you're going to love Ether. If you liked Bitcoin as a buy and hold treasury asset, you'll probably like this one with yield, shareholder. So I think that like this is just a better mousetrap when compared to the MicroStrategy Bitcoin buy and hold.
You talked about the intrinsic yield that Ether gets because of how Ethereum works, right? Ethereum, of course, it doesn't have proof of work. The way that Ethereum secures itself is with proof of stake, which means if you hold ETH, you do a little bit of work for the network, and then you get the Ether inflation that comes out of the network to secure it. And then we don't have to have all the costs of the electricity and all the baggage that comes with proof of work. It's very, very beautiful, very elegant. One of the things that Ethereum has invested in and researched in since its inception in 2015. That's not the only place that Ether gets intrinsic utility and intrinsic demand. You know, something that pills many people, like me and Ryan specifically, is Ethereum's own internal DeFi ecosystem, where there are applications like Aave, where Ether is the primary pristine asset. It is the Bitcoin of its respective ecosystem, right? Sure. And so like Aave, it has millions of Ether in Aave, and people are accessing, using Ether as collateral, as a store of value inside of Aave to take on debt in stable coins or other tokens on Ethereum in order to go be productive. And so, you know, not only does Ethereum itself produce intrinsic yield because of the nature of how Ether works, but Ethereum has its own DeFi ecosystem. It has its own on-chain Wall Street that allows Ether to be productive. Are you going to use DeFi to get productivity? Tell me about that strategy.
Yeah, so I think, as I alluded to earlier, we actually brought on a full-time head of DeFi who has been a core contributor to protocols like Synthetics. So OG DeFi, in addition to having an institutional risk management background, right? So he used to work in risk at JP Morgan, Fortress, groups like that, right? So it's important to us. But I think one important thing to flag, right, is that we are trying to create an institutional quality vehicle, which kind of runs through everything we've done from day one. And so when you look at this, you know, you'll see us engaging in DeFi, but in a measured way, right? You probably won't see us YOLOing our whole stack into the latest protocol that dropped over the weekend. What you're going to see is us helping to credentialize the battle-tested blue chip DeFi protocols that have functionally had, you know, decabillion-dollar bug bounties live for years and proved their security over time. I think that's how you're going to see us engage here, and you will see us engage. Right? I think, to my knowledge, we're the only company of our kind that has a dedicated full-time DeFi team, right, in-house, as opposed to outsourcing some of this. So for sure you will. Like I said, it'll be measured, and you'll kind of, they should be able to point to us as proof to broader Wall Street that a given protocol is trusted and secure and is safe for institutional adoption.
And that's what's awesome about this, right? So we're going to, I think you referenced Aave. I think Aave is a great example of something we would employ. You know, over $50 billion of TVL, been around for 5 years, has had this bug bounty. It's not the latest, greatest, brand new thing that's YOLOing, you know, 100% APYs. And this is where we're going to, when we have our quarterly guidance calls with the public markets, we're going to be educating what is DeFi? And we're going to explain what is Aave and what is staking and what is restaking. So like the you know, half of this is the ability to explain what Ethereum is institutionally.
Use that word explain. Dave and I have often said on Bankless since the very early days, the most bullish thing for Ether is to be understood. And this has been part of the challenge that we've seen, at least in traditional finance and Wall Street, that I was hopeful would get better maybe post Ethereum ETF. And it got marginally better, but it still is not there, which is, you talked about, you know, Citi being a banker in this, and now we're going to see more sell side type research and actual information about Ether, the asset. I want you to tell the story, the narrative of Ether, the asset. So when you try to tell the story of Ether, not just Ethereum, okay? I feel like the Ethereum story has been told a lot of times by a lot of people, smart contract platform, you know, decentralized, global economy, all of these things. And then people are going, oh, I love Ethereum, the technology. And sometimes in TradFi, they forget about Ether, the asset, or they think it's like an equity type of play. It's a high growth tech stock, and they try to value it based on revenue it throws off and all of these silly things. So how what's your message to Wall Street? When you describe Ether, the asset itself, what is Ether?
Ether is the commodity to the future of the internet. Ether has multiple use cases and multiple ways to be valued. Ether is the fuel for every computational step necessary to process a transaction on the future of the internet. Ether generates yield intrinsically through staking, restaking, and participation in the decentralized financial economy. And Ethereum has escape velocity, where 90% of the high-quality liquid assets on blockchains are settled to Ethereum. And each one of those requires a micro payment of Ether. EIP-1559 burns Ether on layer one transactions. EIP-4844 essentially burns Ether through layer two blob transactions. So we have this burning mechanism. And the finite conversation versus a dynamic supply, in our experience, that is a feature and not a bug. And when we employ EIP-1559 for burning at layer one and EIP-4844 for blobs that basically burn from layer two to layer one, we are working with a dynamic economy. The world is way too sophisticated for something static, like a finite supply.
So what are we dealing with here? Because, you know, in TradFi, they like to put things in categories. And you use the word commodity, which brings to mind things like oil, things even like a gold, which has sort of been viewed as a monetary store of value type commodity. And of course, Bitcoin has really taken off under the moniker of digital gold. What is Ether, the asset, if you were to categorize it? Because some in TradFi are still putting it in the, it's like Amazon stock or something, or it's like OpenAI stock or something like this. What is
Ether? It's a digital commodity. It's a CFTC accepted digital commodity.
Okay.
And it's new.
Is it a reserve asset? Is it a store of value? Is it a currency?
It can be both. I mean, I think it can be all of the above.
why should somebody put it on their treasury then? Is the reason because number goes up? Is it number go up technology as well?
I think if someone wants exposure to how the future of the internet is going to work, the best beta on all of that is the acquisition of Ether.
How close is Wall Street to understanding what you just said? What's kind of the delta? Is that delta the opportunity? Yeah.
We're getting there. Give us 4 quarters of quarterly reporting and education, and I welcome you all to join our quarterly guidance when we are a public company, because that is our job. Our job, make no mistake, is to explain this to institutions. What is Ethereum? What is Ether? What is staking? What is restaking? What is DeFi? What are the blue chip best benevolent actors? What are the best use cases? There is no Michael Saylor of Ethereum, because Ethereum and its use cases and its utility should be the story.
What's the size of this story? So, like, is this as big as gold?
What's the size of the TAM of the internet?
I don't know. What is the size of the TAM of the internet?
We've been asked not to make specific price predictions, but I think both of us have published extremely bullish price predictions in the past at, you know, orders of magnitude above where we are. Right,
so you
now.
Guys can't make price predictions. Is that yet? Yeah. Because Michael Saylor makes price predictions, let me tell you.
The ETH Digital Oil piece, I helped co-author with Tim Lowe and the good gentlemen and ladies at Etherealize, and we've pointed people to that. I love the piece that Consensus recently released, both Dave and my alma mater, on just showing the escape velocity and the gravitational pull of high quality liquid assets, where basically there's something like $250 billion of high quality liquid assets on blockchains, and over 90% of that's going onto Ethereum. And the best analogy I can make is 90% of searches happen on Google, and Yahoo gets 1%, and Bing gets 1%, and Ask Jeeves gets 1%. And you know, I'd ask you guys, when's the last time you've used Bing, Yahoo, or Ask Jeeves versus Google? And I think that is becoming more and more apparent that Ethereum is the only blockchain that is decentralized enough, has enough client differentiation to be a global substrate where nation states, institutions, and people can trustlessly interact with each other.
Is this a bigger story, bigger opportunity than Bitcoin?
For sure. I mean, Bitcoin's TAM, if we want to be generous, is digital gold, which is one use case, send, and one asset, Bitcoin. Ethereum can generate any asset and can codify any function.
So recently, BlackRock filed a new S-1 for their ETFs in order to make staking happen inside of the ETFs. So let's assume, fast forward to the future, let's assume that Ether ETFs are all staked ETFs, and so you can get the yield of Ethereum staking inside of the ETF. Why do we, in that world, do we need the Ether machine then? Because then the ETFs are just doing it.
Great question. What I would point you to as a proxy are the European ETPs. If there's, let's call it €1 billion in a European ETP, they are staking, back of the napkin, 50%. So why aren't they staking at full capacity? And let's say the floor risk-free, just vanilla staking is 3% yield. So on their €1 billion in an ETP, they're staking at 50% capacity. And so they're really earning approximately, let's just use the example number of 3% yield, they're really only earning 1.5% on the total amount of money. And the reason why is that the Ethereum protocol is built for decentralization. And the brilliant researchers at the Ethereum Foundation don't really care about, you know, what TradFi financial wrapper Ethereum can go in. They care about the scalability, robustness, and decentralization of Ethereum. And to that point, there is a technological nuance that is extremely important to understand. It's called the withdrawal queue. So today, if one wanted to withdraw their Ether, it would happen in a few days. If, God forbid, a bad black swan event happens on Earth and the world goes risk off and everyone wanted to unstake their Ether at the same time, let's call it 50% unstaking, 90% unstaking, that withdrawal queue would go from a couple days to 6 months or a year. ETFs have 24-hour redemption requirements. ETPs have 24-hour redemption requirements. So what we foresee, so what we're already seeing, let's just call it right now, because we can, the ETFs have zero staking, but the ETPs are staking at 50%. And they're only doing, let's call it floor vanilla staking. They're not able to restake. They're not able to participate in DeFi. And we don't foresee a world where the ETFs are going to be able to exceed a similar yield. And, you know, a devil's advocate would be, well, what about a liquid staking token? If you guys have been watching, because we're the Ether heads and we've been, you know, able to understand the TradFi part, but we know Ethereum as well as anybody else. The liquid staking token, depegged. So you think that BlackRock and Fidelity is going to be able to use a liquid staking token that's just depegged? Nope. And furthermore, you know, using this example, the billion euros staking 50% capacity, only generating vanilla floor yield versus our vehicle that doesn't have the 24-hour redemptions, that's able to participate in the vanilla yield, that's able to participate in restaking, that's able to participate in DeFi. That's why we believe this is the right vehicle for public market participants to access the full suite of capabilities that Ethereum is able to generate.
Maybe just to add on to that, right? I think as you guys well know and have articulated over the years, ETH is a very dynamic asset, more dynamic than some other ones that you might just sit on and hold that are appropriate for a passive wrapper. Properly capitalizing on Ethereum requires active use and management to maximally capitalize on that. That doesn't lend itself to a passive wrapper like an ETF. It requires the kind of active management you can really only get in a company structure if you're going to provide that to the public markets. That's why we think this is the best way for public market investors to own Ethereum over the medium to long term, right? Which is why we set this up with an eye towards the medium term, with the Novo structure, as Andrew flagged, right? We're trying to set this up to become a pillar, not just of the Ethereum ecosystem, but of Wall Street in the medium term, right? That's what we're doing here, because this is the way for those investors to own this asset.
Yeah, that de novo structure, I think that comes across in the ticker, right? So some of the other ETH treasury companies that we've seen, they've been, you know, things with a B in them. That means they were formerly a Bitcoin mining type company, or other, you know, things that are not related to crypto at all, like, you know, gaming companies. That's where SBET comes from. What's the ticker for the Ether machine? It's pretty clean, as I recall.
So the ticker right now, because to your point, I looked at this from kind of first principles, and I thought, well, if I want pure play exposure to Ethereum and to actively manage a vehicle to be able to access the public equity and debt markets, I don't want to be operating or working on another business that has pre-existing operations, pre-existing governance, pre-existing liabilities. I wanted something clean. So that's why we created a de novo entity, so a brand new LLC that I anchored with my own capital, because I'm going to lead by example and I'm not going to let anyone do something that I wouldn't do myself. And I'm patient zero and I need to be maniacally focused on Ether accretion per share. And so that is kind of the spirit of why we kind of differentiated from not doing a reverse takeover of some microcap shell company. And the ticker currently is DYNX and will be transitioning upon SEC blessing of the merger of the two businesses, DYNX and the Ether Reserve, once we create the Ether machine, will be ETHM.
ETHM.
But right now, on NASDAQ, this is trading under DYNX. And then let's call it 3-4 months once the it's just like the SEC process where we then run our operating business under the purview of the Ether machine. But currently it's Dynamics, which is the blank check company that we're merging with.
Imagine a world where traditional finance meets the power of blockchain seamlessly. That's what Mantle is pioneering with Blockchain for Banking, a revolutionary new category at the intersection of TradFi and Web3. At the heart is UR, the world's first money app built fully on-chain. It gives you a Swiss IBAN account, blending fiat currencies like the euro, the Swiss franc, the United States dollar, or the renminbi with crypto, all in one place. Enjoy real-world usability and blockchain's trust and programmability. Transactions post directly to the blockchain, compatible with TradFi rails, and packed with integrated DeFi futures. UR transforms Mantle Network into the ultimate platform for on-chain financial services, unifying payments, trading, and assets like the MI4, the METH protocol, and Functions FBTC. Backed by developer grants, ecosystem incentives, and top distribution through the UR app, reward stations, and Bybit launch pool. For MNT holders, every economic activity in UR drives value back to you, embodying the entire stack and future growth of this super app ecosystem. Follow Mantle on X at Mantle_official for the latest updates on Blockchain for Banking. That's x.com/mantle_official. Binance is the world's number one crypto exchange. Over 275 million users already trust their world-class security. Binance makes starting crypto as simple as it should be, whether it's learning about crypto on Binance Academy or browsing hundreds of assets and viewing your newly created portfolio in a clear, easy-to-track dashboard. Binance helps you go at your own pace. For hardcore traders, Binance Pro opens up industry-leading services for trading professionals with fully bespoke trading products, along with a suite of white-gloved services for VIP and institutional clients. Need support? 24/7 customer service is on hand whenever you need it. And with some of the lowest fees and deepest liquidity in the market, it's no surprise why over 275 million users trust Binance for everything crypto. Download Binance today and get started in minutes. Binance is not available in certain countries, including the United States. Check its terms for more information.
Andrew, I gotta say, it's good to have your voice back in Ethereum. You're back in the spotlight. And I think that maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, because I think that a lot of early Ethereum folks will remember your work at Consensus, will remember the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance and some of those kind of early days and getting that off the ground. And maybe they just assumed, you know, Andrew's, you know, passive. He's in the background now. I mean, maybe some people assumed you were retired, or that you were just like maybe no longer interested in Ether. And then next up, we see you're launching a massive ETH treasury with a good chunk of your own ETH stake. You're depositing this, and now you're on CNBC.
So did you
ever leave, or like did you like why come back? Why step back into the light?
So a few reasons. So first and foremost, you're right. I went to the first ever Ethereum meetup like a complete nerd. In Manhattan, literally meetup.com, and was with Aaron Wright, founder of the Lao, Joe Lubin, founder of Consensus, Sam Cassett, who is the chief strategy officer of Consensus, like the OOGs of day zero pre-Ethereum, pre-Genesis block. I ran around Asia with Vitalik explaining what is Ethereum to anybody who would listen. 2014, 2015, 2016, the first time Ether crossed $1. I put a permission version of Ethereum onto Microsoft Azure and created blockchain as a service. I helped create the Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, which was the largest open source standards body focused on blockchain technology on Earth. I helped build Consensus's global business development and go-to-market strategy. I have been staking because I thought Ether was a commodity. And so I created a commodity pool operator and commodity trading advisor named DARMA, which is an acronym for Digital Asset Risk Management Advisors, and have been securing the Ethereum network from day zero of proof of stake. And you may not have heard from me during the Gensler era because there was no upside in speaking. But every minute of every day since proof of stake, I have been institutionally managing and securing the Ethereum network. And now that we have a positive regulatory tailwind, where we have acts like the Genius Act, which basically gave stablecoin clarity, and the largest beneficiary of the Genius Act is Ethereum, because the majority of stablecoins settle to Ethereum. And now it's time to get loud again. Mm-hmm. And it's time to get this from proof of concept into production. The ZKEVM is en route. It's going to improve speed, privacy, confidentiality. L2s are cooking really well. We're seeing the fast actors like Coinbase with Base, Robinhood with their L2, Kraken with Inc., creating their L2s that are all going to settle to Ethereum layer one. All the institutions, bulge bracket banks, are going to have their own L2. And it's going to settle to Ethereum. And we're here to usher that conversation along and educate Wall Street top down, Main Street bottom up.
Andrew, you mentioned something that makes me want to go down a quick side quest about not wanting to be loud during the Gensler administration. There's a debate in crypto world about how specifically the Gensler SEC administration targeted Ethereum versus
For sure.
crypto broadly.
100%.
They gave Bitcoin the green light, and then everything else they kind of targeted. And there's a debate as to whether or not, you know, Ethereum was specifically hazed by the Gensler administration versus crypto broadly. So there's one argument where, well, no, the Gensler administration, they labeled Solana a security. They labeled, you know, other tokens a security. They never specifically labeled Ethereum security, but they treated it as such. And so saying that the Gensler administration specifically targeted the ecosystem is just wrong, because literally they labeled Solana as security. Then that's one side of the debate. The other side of the debate is, well, actually, they labeled Ethereum a security in secret and really pointed all their firepower at the Ethereum ecosystem specifically. And you know, people like Ethereum builders like Danny Ryan specifically For sure. got SEC subpoenas. And so, yes, while they targeted the crypto ecosystem broadly, it was Ethereum that was really what was in the crosshairs of the Gensler administration. Provide your perspective on that conversation for me.
So I believe that Ethereum got most of the headwinds, and Ethereum's positioned to get most of the tailwinds. Because, you know, again, let's call it versus Bitcoin. Bitcoin has one asset, Bitcoin on it, and one function, send, where Ethereum's going to have infinite assets and infinite functionality. And Ethereum is experiencing these power law dynamics, similar to Google with search, where 90% of assets are being tokenized to settle on top of Ethereum. Whether they specifically targeted Ethereum or not, I mean, what did they get right? They missed FTX. They missed Celsius. If their real job is to, you know, they emboldened meme coins, that majority of the meme coins are on Solana. So I think those are three strikes, you're out. If you're really talking about, you know, protecting the U.S. stakeholders. So you know, I'd rather move forward. Hester Peirce is my hero, and let's keep moving forward.
So Andrew, you mentioned that you never left, but at some level you're back in a loud way, okay? And you're back to tell the story of Ether, the asset, in the entity of the Ether machine. The question is, how loud are you actually going to be? Okay, Michael Saylor's pretty damn loud. Are you gonna out loud someone like that? And then second to that is, if we get how loud are you gonna be, I also want to know, how are you going to be loud? Okay, so where are you going to go? Like,
yep.
Most of crypto already knows about Ether, the asset. In order yep. for the Ether machine to be successful at some level, you have to take that to the rest of the world. Take that to sure. TradFi.
Sure. So I'm going to let the use cases of Ethereum speak for themselves. I don't want to be the Michael Saylor of Ethereum by any means. And I think Michael Saylor is amazing. But the problem is he's got a singular asset that's got a singular function, and there's only so much you can say about holding Bitcoin and sending it. With Ethereum, the good news is we can talk about the productivity of the asset, the yield generation of the asset, the economy that's being built on top of it, and we can make the Ethereum ecosystem the stars. So where we're going to differentiate is we're going to be highlighting the difference in that Ethereum is a productive asset and a productive economy, and letting the use cases speak for themselves. And to where we're going to be having that conversation, you're right. You're not going to necessarily see me at, even though you probably will see me because I love crypto events, but I probably won't be best suited for the ecosystem there. I've got to go where people need to learn about Ethereum. So there's probably going to be an institutional educational roadshow. And then Main Street non-crypto, where we're educating people that are not as experienced. But I love going to DevCon. I love going to ETH Denver. I love going to ETHCC in France. And it's fun for me to see my friends and to see what's being built. So you're not going to keep me away from the OG crypto conferences.
Let me just build on that a second. So there's also a reason there's two of us on this podcast, not just one, and you'll likely hear from more of the team in the future. We're trying to build an institution, not a cult of personality, right? We want to build something that is going to endure for the long term, like Ethereum itself, right? That's why the focus is on the name, the Ether machine, right? We spend a lot of time on branding. We care about kind of building a broad and deep institution here to drive the whole ecosystem forward, right? And while Andrew is truly incredible and has a fascinating story, right, I think we hope to highlight many more voices, not even just the two on this call.
Yeah, totally. I think that's an excellent point. And to that point, to kind of further elaborate, you're going to get probably Ethereum and its use cases from me. You're going to probably get corporate strategy with respect to Ethereum from Dave, as a former McKinsey consultant who basically did corporate strategy for some of the largest Fortune 500s on Earth. You're going to get Ethereum and its staking capabilities from Tim Low, who was the founder of Consensus Staking Vehicle, built the institutional staking vehicle for Dharma. You're going to get Ethereum and its DeFi capabilities from Darius Pritchell, CFA, core contributor to Synthetics, core to Consensus's DeFi ecosystem. You're going to get Ethereum and public company excellence from a new face on the block. His name is Jonathan Christodoro. He is a classic underachiever. Cornell, Wharton, Harvard, Marine Corps, Morgan Stanley Investment Banking, worked for Steve Cohen, worked for Carl Icahn, sat on a dozen corporate boards, including Xerox, Dell, Lyft, eBay, still sits on the board of PayPal. And basically, he is going to be our lead on corporate governance and excellence, because this is a public company, and we'll be explaining how Ethereum works in this context. And we have another surprise who's going to be joining us on growth and marketing, who's going to be marketing Ethereum from Wall Street to Main Street, from The Hague to DC, and basically explaining some of the non-financial use cases. So to Dave's point, the Ether machine story is going to be multifaceted with multi-persona and multi-directional.
But you're playing for number one slot here on this board.
Always play to win.
Absolutely. Yeah. So to build on it, I would say our real target is we want to acquire as much of the network as we can without threatening the decentralization and security of the network. Right. So internally, we've actually been kicking around numbers of about 10%, obviously. But our North Star here is really over the medium term, to be clear, over the next 5-10 years, because to us, this is a long-term game. Like I said, our North Star is to acquire as much as we can without threatening the network itself.
Can I ask a question about that just in general? So without threatening the network, so this is the Bankless podcast, right? And so Bankless means self-custody of your own keys, DeFi, all the things. We're really excited to see the capital from traditional finance enter the space. It's the world's largest capital market. It's only a matter of time. had to happen. We were going to integrate all of these things. But is there any worry as we get a larger percentage of Ether inside of ETFs and inside of treasury companies that we lose some of the decentralization in general? I mean, we're at low percentage points now, but you look at the Bitcoin network, that's kind of where it's headed. No one's even transacting on Bitcoin anymore. I mean, the fees are low because no one's doing it. If they're people think they own Bitcoin when they own like a MicroStrategy, and that's not the same as owning actual Bitcoin. So is there a concern if we get too much in these treasury entities, too much in these ETFs, that we sort of lose some of the decentralization properties that that made Ethereum and makes Ethereum what it is?
I don't think so, because I actually think that the transactional layer will be the layer twos. And I think that Ethereum, through its blob architecture inspired by EIP 4844, really encourages the application layer to be developed on, you know, thousands, potentially millions of layer twos that are customizable. So I actually think that we will be good participants within the Ethereum ecosystem, and we'll always have that North Star that this should be a decentralized, robust protocol, and our contributions to it will never be in a place where it can harm the decentralization.
Yeah. And I think just to build on that, right, I think part of the, like, a large part of the value here, as Andrew alluded to, is using Ethereum itself, right? So we aren't just a buy and hold structure. We're going to be using the tokens to secure the network, to participate in the network. We will be working to help grow the network, right? This isn't a passive.
The business model is ETH.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And we think one of the most valuable aspects of Ethereum is its credible neutrality, is its decentralization. That is, at the end of the day, core to the value prop here. And obviously we won't do anything to undermine that in any way. But with that guardrail in place, yes, I think, you know, our aim is to get as big as we think we responsibly can.
Andrew, I'd love for you to weigh in on this, because you've been around Ethereum from the very beginning. You've seen kind of the roadmap evolve. You're back before there was even the concept of really proof of stake. I mean, it was in the distant future. Now it's here. Obviously, that happened a while ago. David and I have been having this ongoing discussion where, looking at the price performance of the past, I don't know, two to three years for Ether, and it's pretty meager, at least compared to what we think it can do. It's been lagging. Bitcoin, for instance. Solana's had a good run, a couple, you know, other altcoin ecosystems, but Ether has been kind of flat. You know, we're hanging out in the 3000s. My take on that is like, oh, it's because people don't understand Ether the asset. It's a narrative type problem. And that is why partially I'm excited about treasuries. David agrees with me. I think, David, you agree with me. But he also would add, and I also agree with him, that, okay, a big problem too has been the roadmap itself and the focus. And we did these layer twos, but we forgot to integrate them all together, right? So it feels fragmented. We haven't economically integrated all of these things. And so maybe in the future, and the EF hasn't shipped the way it should be shipping. I guess my question to you is, like, when you look at the Ethereum roadmap right now, 2025, what do you see? Are you bullish? Are you optimistic? Do you still feel like we need some changes or pivots?
So I think that there are a confluence of issues that I think have been ameliorated, and we're seeing positive progress. So first and foremost, I'll just group it. The Gensler era prevented the marketing of Ethereum. People like me shut up. People like Consensus shut up. No one was going out, you know, screaming from the mountains what Ethereum is, why it is what it is, and it also thwarted use cases. So we weren't able to see Ethereum's capability, where those headwinds have now turned to tailwinds, where the largest beneficiary of the Genius Act is Ethereum, because the majority of the stablecoins happen on Ethereum. So I think there's the political aspect. Then what I would say is super important is the layer two architecture. So EIP 4844 dictated a lot around blob pricing, and it's cheap, right? It's super duper cheap. Like Coinbase owes the Ethereum Foundation a large donation, in my opinion, because of how cheap Base is and how much is settled to Ethereum layer one. But jokes aside there, I think that that's the right architecture. And I would kind of analogize it to if you used an Uber 10 years ago to go 5 miles, it cost X. And if you use the same Uber to go 5 miles, it costs 2-3x now. Basically, Uber became ubiquitous and became the majority of used ride-sharing app and has raised prices. And as the Ethereum layer one congestion increases and more L2s anchor to Ethereum, I believe that we're going to see price per transaction, gas burn, you know, whether that's layer one and layer two evolve and frankly, increase in price. Third, the EF, I can't say that like they haven't shipped like they should have, because frankly, they have a, you know, let's call it $400 billion network that's in flight, and they've changed the engine while in flight. Like proof of stake was amazing transition. And I have just welcomed all of the evolution of the Ethereum Foundation over the last 6 months. I am extremely bullish on the direction they're going. It seems like realignment was necessary, and I think that, you know, that happens within organizations, and it seems to me as though they have taken that initiative very seriously. And I wouldn't have done this if I didn't think Ethereum is the only true blockchain to be the substrate of the next generation of the internet.
Andrew, Dave, as we start to bring this to a close, you know, I've got one thing in my mind. You know, every cycle we've had in crypto, you guys have been through several of these, seems to have a theme. So last time for Ethereum, it felt like it was DeFi. Like DeFi just kind of broke out 2020. And then we got NFTs after that, 2021. There's some new use cases there. Looking for a theme for this cycle that we're in, this bull cycle. And to me, it seems like what might be emerging is the theme of institutional. It's the institutional theme. We saw Bitcoin take a run just on the institutional bid, right? And it's up into the trillions of dollars. Now, Ether is not in the trillions yet, but maybe it has the potential to get there. And I think it does. Also, we're seeing real world assets. We're seeing the tokenization of stocks and treasuries. And we've never seen that before. We're seeing stable coins. That seems like an institutional moment where all of the banks are like, we need an Ethereum strategy, essentially. We need a stable coin strategy. And so question in my mind, or maybe the bull case here is like, if this theme is of this cycle is institution, what is the next institutional grade asset? The first was Bitcoin, quite clearly. That's how it got into the trillions. Is the next Ether? Or is it a long tail of all sorts of different assets? Am I onto something here? What do you think the theme of the cycle is?
Yeah, maybe I'll start there. Look, I think we very much think the theme of this cycle is institutional adoption, right? That's why we're doing this right now. And I think these concepts aren't necessarily novel. I believe Andrew was first kicking around the idea of an ETH SPAC with some members of our team now in 2020. Okay. But the reason for the push right now is because this is the vehicle for the moment, right? This is the time of institutional adoption, and we're trying to drive that in a first class way. Okay. And we're seeing it not just in the rise of some of these vehicles like the Ether machine or like the ETFs, but also in real adoption out of these banks. Right. So when we, you know, part of trying to build this institutional quality vehicle is that we partner with a blue chip investment bank, Bulge Bracket Investment Bank, to take this out. Right. That had to get signed off at the very top of that institution. Right. We're the only treasury vehicle with that kind of support. And by the way, they're only doing it in Ethereum, not other places, because they want to explore building on Ethereum, right, over the next year or two. Right. So I think, you know, what we're seeing is it's taken some time to get the wrappers up to allow Wall Street to own part of the Ethereum network, just as we have for years. But the next step after that is going to be getting those use cases online, which I think we're really going to start to see over the next 12 to 18 months. I mean, we only got regulatory clarity out of DC in the last couple of weeks, right? And these large institutions can't build on Ethereum without the regulatory clarity. They've only just gotten. And now they can actually start to put into production some of the use cases we've been talking about for the better part of a decade, right? And so I actually think this institutional cycle is really just getting going.
And I'd add to that, you know, the bulge brackets are starting to engage in DeFi. They're taking a conservative approach. And one of the things they're looking for are clean blocks that have no other transactions to any other unknown entities, including unknown validators. They're also looking for a kind of timely inclusion of these blocks. And if they're going to avoid the public block building marketplace, then the only option is a direct agreement with a validator that has a decent proportion of the network. We could be that validator. We are built to be that validator. So we will be working top down institutionally and bottoms up for Main Street for the benefit of Ethereum and its decentralization properties.
I got to say, Andrew, it's true that you never left, but I got to say, it's great to have you back in the spotlight. I think I'm speaking for a number of people in the Ethereum ecosystem. It's just really great to have you back and doing what you're doing in such an active way. And Dave, it's been great to meet you. What can folks expect to see from the Ether machine next?
The active acquisition and management of Ether to compound Ether and to serve as a benevolent actor in the Ethereum community. Bottoms up, Main Street, top-down institution. We're here to help.
When you say active acquisition, does that mean spot order book purchasing of Ether with cash money?
That and OTC.
Okay, cool.
Amazing. Guys, we'll have to end it there. This has been an exciting episode. Dave, Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, guys.
Bankless listener, gotta let you know, of course, you know, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.